Nick Gordon. This is The Connection. More news this week in the fight over abortion. In this case, the news deals with young women, those under the age of 18. The House of Representatives has passed a bill called the Child Interstate Abortion Notification Act. Here's how it would work. In most states, there are already laws on the books that require girls under 18 who want an abortion to show evidence that their parents agree, or at least that their parents know about it. But this new law, if it's passed, would make it a crime for anyone other than a parent to take a pregnant girl across a state line to avoid one of those laws. Let's say you're pregnant, living in Massachusetts, a state that does require parental notification. Your boyfriend or an older brother can now drive you to Vermont to get an abortion because that state requires no notification. This new law would make that trip a crime. Now, the real intent of the law is to require young women to involve their parents in decisions about what to do if they're pregnant. Those opposed to abortion hope it will cut down on the numbers, but there is a fear among others that it may lead these young women to unlicensed and more dangerous places to have an abortion. So we'd like to know what you think. Do you agree with a law that urges young women to talk to their parents? Or is this something that really can't be legislated? Do you see it as one more step in the effort to make abortions illegal in America? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to join the conversation. We are at 1-800-423-TALK. And we're going to start today with the Florida Congresswoman who sponsored this legislation. Her name is Ileana Ross-Leighton. I asked her why she decided she wants to see this legislation signed into law.
I'm the mom of two teenage daughters, and I know that protecting my minor daughters is very important to me. And I know that it's important for so many in our community. All of us are aware of the dangers that our daughters face. And even if you're against this bill, I know that you want the best for your minor daughter. So I'm not saying that to be for this bill means you care about your kids, and to be against it means you're a bad parent. But I know I want to be consulted when my kids make decisions that could impact their lives, their very lives. And when you're talking about a procedure like an abortion, this is potentially life-threatening. It could cause medical complications, psychological complications. My kids can't go on school field trips without me signing a lot of forms. They can't get their ears pierced without parental consent. And yet you have this situation in the United States where my minor daughter could be transported across state lines and be subjected to an abortion, and the parents, me, the mom, would not ever know. And it's pretty common sense, and that's why in all the polls that have been done, 80% of the public favors parental notification laws. Over 30 states have similar laws, but unfortunately, these laws are often evaded by interstate transportation of minors, and often it's openly encouraged in advertising by abortion providers. They would be on the internet or in the phone books or in bus stops saying no parental notification required, and in some cases they provide transportation service to the abortion clinic, and I just think that that's wrong, and I think parents should know and have a say.
I want to ask you about one thing that critics say concerning this new legislation, and you make reference to your own daughters. I'll use them as an example. Let's say, for example, one of your daughters was pregnant and was terrified of telling you that she was pregnant. Now that there is notification required, people who are wondering about this legislation say those girls might in fact go to the old back alley abortionist that everybody was trying to avoid back in the 1970s.
Well, we certainly recognize that that ideal situation, Ozzie and Harriet style, probably doesn't happen in many places at all. So we understand the realities on the ground. And what we're saying is that that child in such a stressful situation, not knowing what choices she should make, perhaps believes, sometimes wrongfully, that her parent would shun her, would move her aside, would abandon her. And many times we've found that that young girl who goes to her parent finds a more nurturing environment and finds a more understanding ear. And I think that this kind of bill does not divide families, but brings families together and has the comfort and the support that that child needs to make the decision that the family thinks is the right. right one to make.
Tell me also what you would say to people who look at all these different laws that are coming into place concerning abortion, people who say that critics of abortion are chipping away at it by doing legislation on the partial birth abortion and on the Child Interstate Abortion Notification Act and others. Is that a reasonable accusation?
Vic, I understand that accusation. I've had it leveled upon me many times as this bill has moved forward. And by the way, we're glad it passed the House, and it's about, we hope, to pass in the Senate, and the President will sign it into law. And I say this is not a rehash of Roe v. Wade. We understand that that's the law of the land. This is about protecting minor daughters and sisters, and all of us understand that when you're talking about a child, that is totally different, and we have a different set of laws that apply to children that don't apply to adults. And when you're talking about an abortion, this is potentially life-threatening. You're going to an abortion clinic where those providers don't know the medical history of my daughters, don't know what they're allergic to, they don't have follow-up care, and they give her an abortion and set her on the street. And what they want is to be paid their money, and I want someone to be looking out for their health and safety, and that's not happening right now, Dick.
Congresswoman, I thank you so much for your time.
Thanks.
That's Ileana Ross-Layton. She is, Republican congressional representative from Florida and is the person who was behind the new legislation we're talking about on the program this hour, the Interstate Notification Act. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255 if you'd like to get in. That's how to reach us. I want to go next to Linda Feldman, who's a reporter with the Christian Science Monitor. Linda has been covering this story and the abortion issue for a considerable period of time and knows how it works in Washington. Linda, thanks for spending a couple of minutes with us.
Hi, my pleasure.
Where does this go from here? The House has passed it. Does it go straight to the Senate?
Well, that's the next step. The Senate, what I'm told is that it will be taken up by the Senate this summer. And the supporters of this legislation are as hopeful as they've ever been that this kind of bill can go through the Senate. The Senate has never considered this type of legislation before, although I should point out that the bill that the House just passed is a new bill. It's different from the previous versions of the bill. It used to be called the Child Custody Protection Act. And now this new legislation, which has just passed, has a second piece beyond the illegality of transporting a minor across state lines for the purpose of having an abortion.
Is there any concern, Linda, that this law may in fact be at some point struck down? I know that in some states, the Notification Acts and the Consent Acts have been set aside by judges because they were seen to infringe on the privacy even of the minors. Is that something that we should watch for in this one as well?
Yes, the opponents of this legislation say that it's unconstitutional on a variety of grounds. One, it does not include a health exception. It does provide for situations when the life of the young woman is at stake, but just on health grounds, there is no exception. They say it violates the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution in that it would require a girl who is crossing state lines to comply with both the laws of her home state and also the parental notification laws in the state that she's traveling to. And if there is no parental notification law in the state she's traveling to, there would be, in effect, a federal parental notification provision. So the opponents of this bill are quite hopeful that if this is enacted, it will either be enjoined on facial grounds, it would just never go into effect
right. Until
it's challenged, or that it would, if it went into effect, they could challenge it with real cases.
Linda, since the election in November, I've been watching what senators and congressional representatives are saying on both sides of the aisle, and it seems to me that what was once an extremely hardline issue defining Republicans on one side and Democrats on the other is starting to get a little softer, a little harder to pin down. I'm thinking specifically of comments that Senator Hillary Clinton has made when she talks about seeking common ground or making room for the respective abortion opponents, embracing moral values. Is there some substance to that it's not necessarily as cut and dried as it used to be?
Well, I think particularly for the Democratic Party and for some Democratic politicians, there's a feeling that the party got too associated with the hardline pro-choice lobby, and that there needed to be an acknowledgement that for most women who undergo an abortion, it is a tragic choice. And it is, it's not something that people go into lightly or easily, and that it is, you know, that it's easy to see how this is the ending of a life. So what you're seeing is Democrats trying to soften the edges on that, and you know this, and it will play into this bill because this doesn't go to the core of Roe v. Wade. This is again another chipping away at the edges of the right, and some Democrats may well feel that this is not the end of the world if there are additional restrictions on teenagers' ability to have abortions.
One last quick one for you, Linda. How much weight is the White House putting on the Senate to get to this and get it passed? The president's made it very clear he'd like to sign this.
That's right. Although it's a little early yet to talk about you know, weight being put on anybody. There's a lot more, I think, more immediately down the pike. We may well have a vacancy in the Supreme Court. We're dealing with this issue of judicial filibusters and the so-called nuclear option. So this, in a way, is a little bit below the radar. I think for the for the activists on both ends of the spectrum, it's a very important piece of legislation. But it's not at the top of anybody's list.
Linda, I thank you for taking a few moments with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
Linda Feldman, a reporter with the Christian Science Monitor there. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. When we come back after the break, we're going to be talking, as Linda was saying just at the tail end there, about being below the radar. Well, we're going to be at ground level. We're going to be talking with a woman who is in charge of a number of abortion clinics operating in the South. We're also going to be talking with another woman who runs a series of clinics that advise young women, older women, to look for anything other than an abortion. We'd like to hear from you. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection this hour. We're taking a look at a new piece of legislation passed by the House this week. I keep forgetting the name of it because it's long and complicated. The Child Interstate Abortion Notification Act. Basically what it does is it encourages young women to speak to their parents before they go in search of an abortion. In fact, it makes it illegal for them to cross state line if they have not done that. We'd like to hear from you. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Joining us now on the program, Alexis Hale. She's in a studio in Miami, Florida, and she is Executive Director of First Choice Women's Centers. That is a series of faith-based centers counseling women to avoid abortion. Alexis has been in this business now for a considerable period of time and spends a lot of time talking with these women. Alexis, it's good of you to join us.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
And Susan Hill is with us from the studios of WUNC in Raleigh, North Carolina. She's the Chief Executive Officer of National Women's Health Coalition, and that's an organization that operates six abortion clinics in six different states. Susan also has been spending a lot of time at the clinic level talking with women who come to the clinics. Susan, it's good of you to join us as well. Thanks.
Thank you. Good morning.
I want to, if I can, start with an assumption that this was to become the law of the land, and ask you both what difference it would make. Susan, do you want to start on that?
I'll be glad to. It actually will make not much difference. Most of the women that we see, young women we see in our clinics, have a parent with them. Probably 90 to 95% do, mm-hmm. and have for quite a few years, even before there were parental consent laws. So, and obviously they're encouraged to talk to their parents. A lot of young women have to go to their parents for financial reasons, and also because they're close to them and they have at least one parent that will support them. This law would really only affect that small percentage of young women who already have determined because of poor family situations, either parents in prison, financial reasons that the mother is out of the state or the father's out of the state, would cause that small percentage of young women to not be able to actually affect an abortion on their own or with their sister, their grandmother, mm-hmm. Other aunts or whatever. And that's really the concern, is that small number of women who have other exceptional situations in their lives.
Is that your personal concern as well, that a young woman who has a really dysfunctional family can't now lean on an older sister or a grandmother for this kind of advice?
Absolutely. You see that the accumulation of restrictions on abortion have all been done in an organized way, and the cumulative effect of that is to make it so burdensome, especially on young women, that obviously the goal of our opponents is to stop abortion. We understand that,
right.
And these laws have been constructed for that. We heard first that parental consent was to involve the parents, and then the courts ruled that you had to have judicial review allowed in order to make an exception for these kinds of situations. Well, that didn't stop the opponents. They weren't happy with judicial review, so now they want to be sure no young women that are afraid to go to their parents or can't for other reasons and are afraid to go to court can go to, you know, a neighboring state with another family member.
Okay.
So this is just a long line of restrictions.
Alexis Hale, from the perspective of the First Choice Women's Centers, do you think that if this legislation were to become the law of the land, it would make a big difference?
I think in some areas it will make a difference. One of the things that we do at First Choice Women's Centers is we have post-abortion counseling groups. And for girls and women who struggle after having an abortion, and many times their comment is that they wish that they had gotten a parent involved, or they wish that they could have done things differently. And so in our area, because it's 8 hours to get out of the state, it's not going to be so much of a problem. But
right.
In areas where you can cross state lines, when there is no parental involvement, the girls don't have the help that they need.
Susan was saying that in her experience, 90 to 95% of the minors that we're talking about already have one parent, at least one parent involved. Is that your experience as well?
Oh, not at all. Our girls come in pretty much alone. Their parents, they come in, they don't want their parents to know.
Is that why they're there? They're looking for someone other than a parent to talk to?
They come in because we offer free pregnancy tests and they want to know if they're pregnant.
Right.
And so before they're going to even chance telling anybody, they want to be sure that they're pregnant. And when they come in, every teenager is of the mindset, my mother's going to kill me, she will never understand, and has difficulty in telling her parents. So we want to come alongside of her and help her with her parents and share with her parents the options available to them.
And what do you make of the suggestion that for that 15 or 16-year-old girl who's thinking to herself, my parents are going to kill me, that some of them will end up at unlicensed clinics because now they're going to need that parent involved if they want to go to a licensed abortion clinic?
Are you saying because she can't tell her parents, she's going to end up in a bad place?
Because, yeah, exactly right. I'm just wondering if you think that's a possibility or a likelihood. It's one of the things that people are worried about, or that we hear people are worried about.
Well, that's why we encourage the girls to get their parents involved, and we'll try to help them. I mean, it's their choice to do so or not to do so, but we want to let them know that, of course, every parent in the beginning, when they're first told, are going to be upset. You need to let them go through that phase, just like you, when you found out you were pregnant, were upset.
Mm-hmm.
And let them go through that phase, and then we'll try to come through some answers. But I have story after story. We've seen over 33,000 girls in the years we've been in Miami. And I have story after story where girls thought, oh, my mom's going to kill me. And yet then when they were able to sit down and talk with them, or we sat down and talked together as a family, their parents were able to work through some good, viable decisions and come alongside of her.
1-800-423-8255. Already a number of people want to join us, so let's start, if we can, in Lansing, Michigan. Aaron is on the line. Hi, Aaron.
Hi.
Tell me what you think.
Well, first off, I just want to let you guys know where I've come from. I'm 19 years old. Just to give a little info on where my perspective is coming from. And I think that actually parent involvement is an extremely good thing. And I think that for girls who are going through these things, the whole role of a parent, especially in the in ages of adolescence for their teens, the whole role is to, as someone mentioned earlier, to help make these crucial decisions and help guide them. And I think that to completely strip the parent out of the equation is to completely undercut that relationship. And especially with something so crucial, I think that there's so many different alternatives. Even, you know, and just as the interviewer was saying, that there's so many different options, and parents aren't necessarily just going to be really upset. You know, they can understand and talk about different options. And
have you got any kind of sort of personal perspective on this, Aaron, either a sister or a girlfriend or a friend who's faced this situation?
I do not have a first-hand witness of this, other than cousins. I do have cousins who got pregnant and weren't sure what to do, but they didn't end up getting an abortion, and they talked to their parents, and it's a hard thing, and that's really understandable, but I think it all comes with the territory of, you know, being pregnant in that situation. It's going to be a difficult thing. It's difficult on everyone, especially, you know, the girl and the parents, but I think that that is just part of the equation, and to completely just take that out, especially in order just to get rid of it, you know. I think that
Aaron, let me just stop you there if I can. I want to turn to Susan Hill on one feature of this. I read something in a recent newspaper column, Susan, where the columnist was saying, good idea, great idea, but you can't legislate that girl to turn to her parents, and that is part of what this law is trying to do.
Oh, I agree. I also wanted to go back to something that my counterpart had said. It's not true that every teenager that finds out they're pregnant doesn't want to tell their parent right away. I've been doing this since 1973, providing abortion services. I see so much more parental involvement in the last 15 years, since baby boomers have aged and have children that are of childbearing age. They're closer. They share a lot with them. They share a lot of their personal information with them. And at least in, I would say, in 30 to 35% of the cases, the first person the girl tells is her mother. So it's not true that everyone panics. It's not true that everyone is afraid to tell their parents. The law that was put into effect on judicial review and with parental consent was, again, only for that very small number of women, young women, who have other reasons that we can't always know. There's abuse in families. There's alcoholism in families. There are families who parents, the one parent living with them, has mental illness. And sometimes we have girls tell us that their parents can't deal with it, that they have so much else that they're going through, that they go to an older sister. You know, anyone who has sisters and, you know, is a woman herself knows that there are many times she has shared her most personal information with her older sister rather than her mother or her father for trust relationships and all kinds of other things. In any of the cases that I've seen, the people that have brought a young woman into a clinic without the parental involvement have been an older brother or sister, which is who the person could go to. We've had ministers bring young women. They went to another person that they could trust if they felt. Sometimes our patients are more mature than their parents.
Let me just hear from Alexis on this, whether or not this whole class of people that Susan's describing, Alexis, are being caught out of this loop as a result of the law.
Yes, and as she mentioned, that in her figures it's a small number because of poor family conditions, and those conditions have been there a long time, and they have to be addressed separately, I think, from the pregnancy issue. But you know, when you talk about it not being able to legislate this situation here, you know, we legislate that parents are responsible for providing for their children, for paying for their medical care. They're responsible if their kids are not taken to school. I mean, I've seen parents whose kids have been threatened to take away their kids because their kids were out of school too much. You know, they're responsible on all these other levels, and including and especially medical things, and yet now we're saying this 13 or 14-year-old can go and have a surgical procedure without any kind of parental involvement. That doesn't make sense.
Do you think then the law has more to do with parental rights than it really has to do with the rights of the minor who's pregnant?
Yes. I think that that's such a huge issue here is I, as a mom and as a parent, feel like I have the right to be involved in my child's life, especially her medical care.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Next to Pinehurst, North Carolina, John's on the line. Hi, John.
Hi.
Tell me what you think.
Well, I don't think it can. I don't see any way that this is going to work. You know, it's a law that says you can't go to your church, you can't go to your scout leader, you can't go to a teacher, you can't go to a family member, a brother, sister, aunt, uncle, grandpa, grandma.
Well, you can go to all those people. You just can't get them to drive you across the state line. You know.
But what can she drive herself across the state line? What happens to a teenager, that 17-year-old that drives from Massachusetts into Vermont? Has she committed a crime?
I don't know the answer to that.
You drive all the way to the line and swap drivers, and she drives 10 feet, and then you swap drivers again and take her the rest of the way. I just don't see how this works.
Susan Alexis, do you have an answer to John's specific question about this?
I was going
to
say, this is a discussion that has been had about the flaw in this reasoning and in this law. The one thing that abortion opponents say when you ask who would they prosecute in the case of, Roe v. Wade being overturned, they always say the physician but not the woman. In this case, what we have heard is the position is that the young girl shouldn't be prosecuted but people who take her. So the obvious question, and I think the gentleman from Pinehurst has hit it on the head, is what if she takes herself? And the answer has been they don't want to prosecute her. But so, teenagers are smart. They're very smart. They know what to do. They know how to do it. And I think you've got to write a law that actually makes sense if you're going to do it. And once again, to leave out other support groups that are a natural place to go if you feel you can't deal with or depend on your parents. I just wanted to respond to one thing, that our friend in Miami said. Anyone who watches the news every night has got to understand that we can't legislate good parenting. Every day there's a news story of young children doing things because parents aren't there for them.
Let me, Susan, if I can turn this just back to John in Pinehurst. John, are you a dad?
Yes, I am. I have a 17-year-old son.
Has he got a girlfriend?
He does, and they are very responsible people. I'm not really worried about them, but as a parent, I'm cognizant of the situation nationally and the world. You know, I remember I was 17 one time.
I mean, I guess the question really, John, is are kids that age able to make these kinds of decisions? What do you think?
But isn't the obvious answer? Some of them certainly are. Some of them certainly are. And we've never had in the history of the world any way of knowing which was which. We don't know which children are mature or not, and some children don't even know whether they're mature until the situation arises in which maturity is demanded. John Paul Jones, how old was he when he was an admiral? 16?
So, Alexis Hale, when you do draw that line saying minors, we're talking about people who are under 18, is that a reasonable way of saying that, you know, if we got to try and figure out where the parents do have the right to be involved, that's the best we've got to work with?
Yes. You know, there's no doubt that some girls are going to find a way around the law. Girls are going to have abortions. They're going to find out how to do that. But we can at least help those. Again, I have to keep coming back to what our girls say, particularly in our post-abortion counseling groups. And they say things like, if it wasn't legal, I wouldn't have had it. And I wish that it wasn't legal, because if I had known then how I would feel now, I wouldn't have done it. You know, their feelings after the abortion are so different. You know, we say that teens are smart and that some are responsible, and that's true. But, you know, any teenager can get into trouble on any level, and then they're going to look for a way out. Now, you picture this 13, 14, 15-year-old. First of all, she's at a very hormonal place in her life. Secondly, she's pregnant, so her hormones are flying. She is a teenager and not equipped to make that kind of a decision. And so this is the worst possible time for her to make a life-changing decision. And no matter what she decides, whether she parents, places that baby for adoption, or has an abortion, that decision's going to change her life. And she needs a support system to do that.
And the new law that we're talking about on the program this hour, Child Interstate Abortion Notification Act, which has passed the House, now goes to the Senate and then on to the White House, would in fact make it against the law for an adult to drive a minor, a young girl who's pregnant, across a state line to avoid notification or consent. Do you think that this is a good law, a good way of shifting responsibility onto the parents? Or do you think that it is taking away rights and responsibilities that some people that age should already have? 1-800 423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. What do you think of a law that encourages, that mandates young women to consult their parents if, in fact, they are looking for an abortion? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Alexis Hale is with us. She's Executive Director of First Choice Women's Centers. That's three centers in the Miami-Dade County area in Florida that are faith-based, counseling women to avoid abortion. Susan Hill is with us. She's the Chief Executive Officer of National Women's Health Coalition, and that's an organization operating six abortion clinics in six different states. We're going to go to Amherst, New Hampshire, for a call from Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello.
Tell me what you're thinking.
Well, I'm a family practice doctor up here, and there's so many things I'm thinking about this. One is that all these restrictions, all the laws that are being passed to restrict access to abortion really affect women, young women who have the least amount of resources to begin with. Wealthy, upper middle class women and girls are going to get the abortions that they seek. And classically, we're talking about, you know, now young women who have the least amount of resources and the nowhere to turn to in many cases, and it is in many cases, and we're making it even more difficult for them.
Why is it harder for them then? Why does it kind of emphasize that class difference you're talking about?
Well, certainly just access and money. I mean, you know, teenagers at 16 drive. So if you come from a family that has a car or have friends that have cars, then you're able to get somewhere by yourself. You don't need a parent to do anything about that. And then, as I said, it's a whole access issue. You can't legislate good parenting. They keep speaking of this idealized, you know, my children, if it were my daughter, I would...
Well, you're a family practice practitioner. What's your experience? Are the girls who are under 18 and getting pregnant, are they generally involving their parents in this?
I would say that the majority of them are, and whether there's a law or there isn't a law, I don't think it's going to affect teenage behavior. Either they have a good relationship with their parents to begin with, and they're able to talk with them or, you know, bite the bullet and get through that initial difficult conversation, or they haven't. And if they haven't, criminalizing it isn't going to make it any better.
And are you saying... No, I was just wondering, when you're saying that because, you know, at 16 they have access to cars and getting around without their parents driving them somewhere, that you have the concern that they will, in fact, if they don't have that family relationship, that they might be looking for a back-alley abortion.
Yeah, this whole thing about... I don't know that there are that many back-alley abortions available anymore. What we're doing is forcing them to have unwanted pregnancies, and that's a whole huge mess. So, no, it's not that they're going to have a back-alley abortion. They may, but, you know, doesn't have the availability that it did before 1972.
Now, Alexis, I guess what you would say here is that the stress of the unwanted birth is a whole lot better than the stress of that back-alley abortion under any circumstances. That's what you're telling people?
Well, what I'm saying is, I always want to come back to the girl and how she feels, and we see them every day. These girls come in, and they're hurting, and they're scared, and they're confused. And to not, you know, you had mentioned that we are counseling girls to avoid abortion. What we want to do is share the whole truth. I want to share with her the stage of her baby. I want to share with her the risks of abortion, the pros and cons of all the issues of adoption, of parenting.
Okay, but you're not saying to her that the abortion is one of the options that she can and should be considering, right?
I will say that it's one of the options she can consider. That's her choice. But we try to be neutral when we come in and say, look, this is the pros and cons of abortion. This is the pros and cons of adoption. This is the pros and cons of parenting. And these are the options available to you. This is the help that can be provided for you in these circumstances. And so at least if a girl walks out of our center and chooses abortion, she will have done so with all of the information. I feel like it's her right to know the whole situation so that she can't come back later and say, gosh, if somebody had just told me how I would feel. So you want to keep coming back to that girl, and how is she going to feel after the abortion? And I don't think that any of our opponents would go so far as to say that someone just has an abortion and that's it. They never feel anything, because you can't have an abortion and not feel anything.
There is one other aspect of this that I want to make sure that we include in the program. Susan, I'm going to ask you about this. I'm holding in my hand a list of states and laws requiring parental consent and notification, and places where the laws are in effect and places where they're not in effect, and states with no laws. And now we've got the new one that we're talking about here, the Interstate Abortion Notification Act. And I'm wondering how much of this, you know, we're talking about a very short window here where a pregnant woman has to make, a young woman, girl, has to make these decisions. How much of it is about law, understanding the laws now, rather than being able to concentrate on what's best for health or all?
Well, that's the question, and that does go back to the organized effort to make it so burdensome. I have said, one of our clinics is in Jackson, Mississippi. It's the only clinic in the state. We see women who drive 4 and 5 hours, sleep overnight in their cars because of 24-hour waiting periods. It has the most restrictions that have ever been. It has so many restrictions that the abortion opponents have said publicly they can't think of any others now.
State restrictions.
There's nothing left for them but totally stopping it. And still, the same number of women come in, young and old, and they sleep in cars and do what they have to do. So the fact is that, you know, a lot of these laws, I've said young women now and almost all women seeking abortion are going to have an attorney on retainer in order to understand the laws, as are every provider in the country. And some contradict others. You can get through two or three restrictions and then be in violation of a fourth restriction because of the first two now. Mm-hmm. So all of this is done with an appointed effort. It has been orchestrated. We have been told that. I've been told that by anti-abortion opponents as long ago as 15 years ago, that they would restrict us restriction by restriction until it was impossible to obtain an abortion. And they've been very successful. The only issue is there's still 1.3 million women having abortions each year. And just to make a point, there are 40 million women in this country who have had abortions. Not all of them go to my colleagues' post-abortion counseling. A lot of women adapt to their abortion decision, adjust to it, feel it was the best decision for them. Some are they're young and old. I've seen 30 and 40-year-old women who say that they wish they hadn't had abortion, and I've seen 13 and 14-year-old women 15 years later that say that it was the best decision that they could have made at that time in their life.
Well, let's hear from some people who are joining us actually to speak about that. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. In fact, we have a caller on the line now from Vermont who's asked that we not use her first name, and that's fine with us. I'm going to call you Jane, just so I don't have to call you something blank. Jane, tell me why you're calling.
Well, I was calling because I think that the characterization of young women not knowing where to turn, what they want, and feeling like they wish they'd known before they'd had an abortion is an unfair characterization. As someone who did that as a teenager, I did not have that experience. I was relieved that I could get an abortion.
How old were you?
I was 17.
Mm-hmm. Did your parents know?
No.
And what if you'd been obliged by the law to tell them?
I probably would have run away. I would have gone to Europe, Canada, anywhere.
So what exactly is the point that you're making to Alexis here, who's talking about the difficulty that women have after the abortion? What's the point that you want to make to her?
The point is that I think that women, that young women do have the ability to make choices that are the best choices for themselves and their lives. I mean, our parents don't always make the best choices for us. And I think that my mother was Catholic, and I believe that if I had gone to her, that she would have been insistent that I have a baby at 17. And I had totally different visions and plans for myself at that point in my life.
Jane, stay on the line for half a sec. I'm going to let Alexis back in here and let you two talk to each other.
Well, Jane, you know, and there's no doubt that there's other women like Jane who have gone through an abortion and feel like it was the best decision that they made. And we find that the first stage that a woman goes through after an abortion is what we call relief and denial, and they can stay in that stage for years. I have had women come to us 20 years after an abortion, and all of a sudden, because now we have fiber optics and we can show the life inside the womb at very, very early stages, they're like, oh my gosh. And so they come to grips with what really happened, and they have to get through that. You know, we don't allow a woman to grieve. She's lost her child. And that's a sad fact, and we don't allow her to grieve because she's made that choice, and so we kind of say, okay, get on with your life. And there's a very deep wound there for most women. And when they look at that, they need to be allowed to say, wow, I lost a child. And
Jane, what are you thinking as you hear this?
I have a fundamental disagreement with what we're talking about. A child is a fully developed individual, and I think that's totally different from what we're talking about. And that's a fundamental difference in the pro and anti-abortion camps, is just what this individual was describing. And, you know, it's a fundamental difference. And I do have children now, and that was a choice on my part.
One quick last question for you, Jane. If your daughter came back and said, I had an abortion, didn't want to talk to you about it, what would you think about that?
I would be disappointed in my parenting skills, my communication skills with my child. And that would be my starting point, would be to, you know, see how I could repair that, because I think that that's the most important thing, to know what's going on with your kids,
right.
Know what they're thinking, how they're feeling,
No, I thank you for your call. I think it's a good point. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Susan Hill, I wanted just to hear briefly from you on this, because the concentration on the involvement of the parents, and we heard it very clearly there in what Jane was talking about, is a way of perhaps drafting a law that's almost certain to get through. What politician is going to be able to explain to his or her constituents that they voted against a bill that was focused more on parental rights in the way that it's been put together?
Well, I think you're right. It's insurmountable. The irony is there are legislators and politicians whose own daughters have not told them that they've had an abortion. And so on one hand, they are preaching parental involvement when lots of times they've been too busy to be involved in their own daughters' lives. And we've seen those families and those women. So, you know, there's a certain amount of hypocrisy in legislating parenting when you may not be a good parent yourself. Aside from that,
let me address that point if I can. When you talk about hypocrisy here, and could it be that some people who have had a daughter who have had an abortion want to help others to not go through that situation? They want to encourage parents to be involved. They want to not let them go through that situation.
Susan, what do you think?
Well, I think the issue is parenting starts when your child is born, and 15 or 16 years later, the parenting, you already have parented the way your child is going to respond. So to decide that you want other parents to be good parents when their daughters are already 16 or 17, there's a lot of bonding and relationships that have had to occur before that. In most cases, and I'm thankful when I see it, and I see patients every day, they have good relationships. And I also want to say, young women today, again, I've started this business in 1973, young women today are the most educated, brightest, well-informed women I have ever seen. They have the internet. They have information everywhere. They know about stages of pregnancy. They know about contraception, whether they chose to use it or not. It is an issue that could be dealt with by parenting, good parenting. They are absolutely amazing to talk to. They don't understand is really something that comes from the 80s.
Back to our callers, to Worcester, Massachusetts. Maureen's with us. Hi, Maureen.
Hi there.
Tell me what you're thinking.
Well, it's been really interesting to listen to all these different comments. I'm approaching 50. I have 6 children. Immediately after Roe versus Wade, when I was 19, I became pregnant in college, and I went to a Planned Parenthood clinic. And at that point in my life, I the thought of talking to my parents was not even on my radar screen. It was just, I can go down to this clinic, I can get this taken care of, and go on with my life. I never considered the fact that, and I never pondered the fact that I had a baby growing inside of me.
You did have the abortion, Maureen.
I had the abortion. It was a problem. I wanted this problem to go away.
Do you regret that decision?
I thoroughly regret the fact that I feel, at this point, I feel like I took the life of one of my children, and it's a terrible, horrible feeling that's haunted me for years. And I've wrestled with it. I've forgiven myself. I've asked God's forgiveness.
Been a law in place at the time, Maureen, that insisted you have your parents involved with that decision, would that have made a difference?
I think it would have. I'm sure it would have made a difference. I'm sure I could have talked to my parents. But I at that time and at that stage of development in my young life, I didn't think that it was a possibility. As a parent now, I would want my daughter to come and talk to me about it.
Would you want your daughter to be obliged to speak to you because of what the law says?
That's a tough question. I would like that. Honestly, I would like that. And I want to make one other point in that.
I need you to be really quick. We're right at the end of our program.
Okay. I strongly agree with the person who said that someone needs to lay out to everybody who's considering an abortion the whole picture. That is so true. So true. You need to have the whole picture of abortion as an option. You need to have the picture of adoption as an option. You need to have a picture of what it means to have a child and then raise it as your own.
Maureen, I have to stop you. We are out of time. I thank you for your call. And I thank also Alexis Hale, Executive Director of First Choice Women's Centers in Florida, Susan Hill, Chief Executive Officer of National Women's Health Coalition, joining us from a studio in Raleigh, and also on the program, Congresswoman Ileana Ross-Layton from Florida, Linda Feldman, reporter for the Christian Science Monitor. We'll no doubt be talking about this subject again soon. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.